to kick off, then I'll just ask Ed his thoughts on, like, well, why he's doing this, and or why we've asked him to take part in something like this, why he'd want to, and take it from there, I guess. So, Ed.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I suppose I'm not really sure why he asked me to do it. I know that I was listening to the podcast because of the interview we did with our friend John Hannon, I guess, last year, right?
Yeah.
Although the time is so relative these days, punchline intended. And obviously, you know, what happened to John since then is very sad. But yeah, so I guess that's how our paths crossed, right? And then we were talking about whether I could contribute in any way, you know, and maybe not just talk about, you know, bands that we've been in and all that kind of stuff. And you dropped this one on me. And I thought, oh, this would be quite interesting, because I kind of try to be one of those people that's kind of interesting on lots of different levels and not just talking about music. And then, of course, I've been completely called on it and put into a show talking about film. So that'd be quite interesting. So I do, funnily enough, I've always been a real fan of like the kind of time travel, well, the use of time in kind of, I guess, TV shows and movies, because it basically always makes your head hurt. And, you know, my views on it have changed over the years, you know, like that's not possible, down to like, oh, that could be possible, and, you know, that type of thing. So yeah, it's just good. And I just wanted to, and I've listened to some of the stuff you guys did on the kind of the folk horror thing. That was a really good show.
Yeah.
Listen to that. And I thought, yeah, it'd be fun to have a chat. And, you know, one of the things I've really enjoyed about the kind of lockdowns that we've had over the last couple of years is the kind of the fact that the podcast thing has enabled us to sort of make new friends and collaborate and stuff in a different way. And it's been really good fun to me. I've done quite a few and it's been just been great. So hopefully this will be the same.
Yeah, well, it's mad, because it's doing this idea, the concept, you know, like talking about films, sci-fi, time travel films, but it's like time travel as well, because I'm talking to Che, who, like, Bob Tilton, I love Bob Tilton, like 25 years ago, and then 30 years ago, whatever, I like loved the Stupids, and then there's this sort of collision of like weird shit going on now. It's just kind of bizarre. If someone had said back then, you know, it's not something you could comprehend particularly easily if you went back in time.
So I guess it's the same with kind of friendships and, you know, the circles we move in. As we all get slightly older, this kind of age gap becomes less meaningful, you know. So, and also we're all still here, right? That's the other thing.
Yeah,
you know, not everyone's stuck with it and not everyone's still here in, you know, in any sense. So yeah, it's great, but it's good to meet both of you as well.
Well, I suppose the obvious place to start with time travel and things in film is like Back to the Future, isn't it? Like, that's the one that puts it in the sort of pop culture, or the idea. You know, that's when I first, I suppose, knew about the concept of time travel, when I'm like, whatever it was, 6 or 7 or something, and you get this kind of idea. That was,
yeah,
that
I
was
think,
what
I
my
think you're
thoughts.
Probably right. It's probably the blockbuster movie that kind of spans our respective generations, that was like the massive blockbuster, and then obviously became a sort of bit of a franchise movie. That you're right, yeah, put it front and center, didn't it?
Yeah, Che?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in terms of, you know, my interest in time travel, it was like Tom Baker, Doctor Who, initially, you know, just hiding behind the sofa. But Doctor Who is one of those shows that, you know, it's, even though it's about a guy who travels through time, it kind of squanders that element, because he's just going all over the universe, and it, you know, it doesn't really matter if he's going through time, because he's just ending up on alien planets half the time anyway. And so it's not that interesting. But I think Back to the Future does it a lot better, because it's about, you know, even though it's like, you know, set in America and on a soundstage, it's set in a normal, everyday kind of, you know, environment. It's about the people within their environment, and even though they go back in time, there's human drama, and it's the same whether it's in the current time or whether it's back in the 50s, and it's all about like human drama. And the time travel is just, you know, a plot device that that helps bring that out, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. It's almost like the action's going on in different, it's the same sort of drama action, right, in different times.
Yeah.
And that the time travel between them is just a way of getting to those different storylines, really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So,
and I guess unifying them as well.
Yeah, for sure. You know, like, you know, you look at the classic, you know, time travel movies, like, you know, The Time Machine, like H.G. Wells, and there's a good movie version of that. And it's a lot of fun, but I would rather watch a movie about, you know, people's, you know, interaction, rather than just going back to a, you know, a different time, like, oh, this is different, and, you know, I expect the drama to come from that, and rather the drama was, you know, kind of interpersonal
I think what's interesting is that the use of time travel in films, if you look at some, and this is obviously a very simplistic overview, right? Because I'm ignoring probably the other 1,000 movies about time travel in between The Time Machine and Back to the Future. Yeah. But the idea is that, you know, in The Time Machine, it's all about the ability to travel, and that time, and that's what it's about. Like, oh my God, we can do this, right? Whereas kind of public taste has matured by the time we get to, I don't know, the 80s, whenever Back to the Future came out. And it's almost like time travel's a given, that that's a possibility. So let's build an actual plot around it. You know, it's an ingredient in a plot rather than just, oh, this is the thing that time travel's the actual, like the money shot, as it were, in the film.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's so many like movies from like, you know, the 50s and 60s where it's like time travel is the plot. You know, it's a bunch of scientists and they invent a time machine and they end up in some goofy place. And that's the whole plot. And that's not that interesting. Back to the Future is interesting, but it's not because of the time travel that it's interesting. It's because of this whole mess that Marty McFly ends up in with his parents.
Yeah, this does the grandfather paradox. That's the idea that if you go back in time and you do something that alters the present, then that can be, well, pretty detrimental unless everything's exact and everything turns out the right way. So you've got to make sure that you know, your parents meet and create you, or you don't exist. That idea, I think,
that might be a good segue to go into that Predestination movie, which is all about making sure your parents meet in the weirdest way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know it was more your idea of things. Jay was doing the more like the portals, dimensions idea than just like a sci-fi film. It's a sort of niche section of a genre, isn't it? Really, these films are a bit more, I suppose, psychological, and I guess this Predestination is the kind of example of that one that we're talking about. So I don't know how to intro this one other than the sort of brief paragraph, which is, as his last assignment, a temporal agent is tasked to travel back in time and prevent a bomb attack in New York in 1975. The hunt, however, turns out to be beyond the bounds of possibility. That doesn't really go anywhere to explaining it.
Well, it sets up the story that we as the viewer are told at the start, right? That's what we understand the film is about at the start. Yeah. You know, so that kind of takes us, well, I don't know, 10 minutes in, and then it all completely, you know, the subplot kind of emerges, which is obviously really the real plot. But I have to say, I did like those 70s elements to it. I thought that was good. I mean, of the films on the list that we've covered, this is the one with one of the ones with the higher production values and obviously the sort of bigger name cast and stuff. So they did the period pieces. I thought they did them pretty well, actually. And I quite like being in sort of 1970s New York for a little bit.
Well, it's based on a 1959 short story as well, which is another kind of thing. It's just like pretty mind-bending how someone would dig this thing, this piece of this text up, and then decide that they were going to do a film.
Yeah, I did a quick Googling of the story, and it's like All You Zombies by Robert Heinlein. The movie sounds pretty close to the story, except the subplot with the fizzle bomber that I don't think is in the story.
Right.
It sounds like they added that as just to kind of give it a bit more momentum for the movie.
Yeah.
But it does sound very close, and I feel like that story just kind of takes all the old tropes about, you know, the grandfather and the paradox and whatnot, and just kind of takes it to the nth degree. It just kind of pushes it as far as it can push that envelope with, you know, all the characters, well, nearly all the characters turning out to be the same character at the end of the film. Spoiler alert, by the way.
Imagine if you were to sort of impregnate a version of yourself, and then the child would also be yourself. And at the same time, there'd be another sort of parallel to that going. So it gets pretty fucked up, I think. That's my take on it anyway.
To say the least. I'm trying to remember what, because in movies, you know, where there's this kind of realization or the kind of twist or whatever, and sometimes it's so sort of blinding in terms of your perception of what you've just seen, your brain's work, that I've forgotten what the whole sort of Ethan Hawke side of things was then.
So he's the temporal agent.
When we fight, so he's the temporal agent. And I forgot what actually happens, because he's obviously, I don't want to spoil anything, obviously, much more than we've already done. But because he's setting stuff up. And then when we kind of realize that, oh, this and this, and the kind of dominoes all fall in place and stuff, and I forget what happens to him.
I remember at the end of the film, you kind of see him in he gets out of bed and he has the cesarean scar on his stomach, which kind of and that's a kind of aha moment. Just kind of like, you're like, oh shit, and it kind of brings it all together. Kind of figure out that it was him. Did that happen before he killed himself, or did that happen after he killed himself?
Yeah, this is the thing, right?
I feel I need to diagram it.
Yeah.
And I think that these films, I think sometimes, sometimes you don't want to do that because it's all about the ride. You know, other times maybe you do want to do that. And I'm always intrigued by people when they make movies and stuff, how they kind of, you know, they live it, right? So that every single aspect of the thing they're doing that they know and they see it. But sometimes they might lose track of the fact that we don't all know this, right? Or they maybe have had to edit some bit out, but they can still make that leap because they know the story. But we don't. And so bits sometimes are taken out, or there's some inferences that we miss, you know, or things we don't infer because we don't get it and stuff. And I think this one actually did quite well at kind of keeping us together. With some of the other films on the list, I'm a bit like, you know, I think you know what's going on here, but we don't have a fucking clue, you know. So that was good. And I think this did hold it together really well, you know. I mean, I definitely want to watch it again.
Well, the directors, it's two brothers, the Spearing brothers. I don't think this film made... I don't think it made a great deal. It's just like it was done in Australia, which is another kind of odd element. I suppose that ties into the film that you originally suggested looking at, which is Triangle, which Predestination is 2014 and Triangle is 2009. I don't know if you want to do an intro to why you thought this was a area to look into of films or... genre.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And Triangle's kind of a bit like Predestination in that it's one of those films that at the end you feel like you need to do a diagram or something to explain what exactly had gone on. But you trust that the director has done one at some point. So you're like, yeah, I trust in what I'm being told. I'm just going to go along with it. And like I said, just enjoy the ride rather than worry too much about it. Anyway, this was a movie that was like, over here at least, it was marketed like a Bermuda Triangle themed slasher movie. And I remember thinking, how is that going to work? And it's not a Bermuda Triangle themed slasher movie at all. It's about a young woman with an autistic son who is invited by some friends to go on a boat ride. Because she's been depressed and they want to just kind of cheer her up. And they end up in a storm, and it's kind of inferred that it's something is a bit off about this storm, and they find a ship floating in the ocean. And once they get on the ship, which is, to all intents and purposes, just abandoned, it's empty, there's no one there. Once they get on the ship, they find strange stuff starting to happen. They're attacked by a hooded attacker who at one point has an axe, which I think made the folks think that it was a slasher movie. Anyway, so this attacker is trying to kill them. And long story short, spoiler alert, it turns out that the boat keeps arriving at the ship, and different versions of this Jess character, the main character, who keeps being brought to the ship, is trying to stop this time loop of people constantly being brought to the ship by killing them. And she thinks that the only way to stop the time loop from happening is killing everyone who keeps arriving at the ship. It's a very strange film. It's initially you're in the dark about what's happening. You know, there's a killer on the ship. It's trying to kill everyone. It turns out that the killer is a future version of Jess, and she's convinced that the only way to get off the ship is by killing all these people who keep arriving to stop the time loop. And it ends with a really dark ending where you think she's finally gone off the ship, but she keeps discovering piles of bodies of all the people and animals that she's had to kill along the way. Really kind of messed up. I kind of love it. It's one of those films that I've watched like four or five times.
This is the it's probably an example of the causal loop, which is like a paradox of when a future event is the cause of a past event, and then that in turn is the cause of another future event. And all the events exist, but the origins can't be determined. Sounds fucked.
It is, yeah. It's like every time the boat brings more people, it adds more variables to the equation for Jess to deal with. And you're never really sure which Jess you're rooting for, because there are so many dead Jesses along the way. You're just rooting for Team Jess, and you're just hoping that one of these Jesses is able to get off and get back with her son. It's a strange, very strange narrative. It's kind of a one-off. I can't think of another movie like it, in that, you know, it just keeps killing off all the characters, including the main protagonist, and you're just kind of hoping that one of them is going to make it.
As you know, I didn't watch the movie, but I did watch the trailer. Despite not being a fan of Melissa George when she was like on the soaps, I really liked her in Dark City. Mm-hmm. I really liked her in Dark City, which I thought was great. And so I was like, oh, this is cool. So I watched the trailer, and it's really funny because obviously the trailer is nothing like what, you know, in terms of what the trailer tells you the film is like. It's nothing like what you've just described there, Che. But what's funny is that it struck me, because you've got the kind of ghostly ship emerging out of the fog, and you've got this kind of like group of kind of previously kind of spunky, kind of positive people kind of on the yacht. It made me think of an episode of Scooby-Doo.
It's a lot like Scooby-Doo.
And that's what it felt like to me. Like, zoinks, you know, and like people running away from, like, you know, kind of, you know, axe murderers on the boat and stuff. But, you know.
It's like the most messed up episode of Scooby-Doo you'll ever see. I recommend it highly. It's you know, if you don't like horror films, it does have some blood and gore in it, but
I might give it a go. I was trying to get my daughter to watch it for me. I was like, I've got to watch this movie. Do you want to watch this for me? Because she's like, you know, she's, thing is, ever since I had kids, I can't watch scary movies. I don't know what it is, but I became a complete wimp about sort of 16, 17 years ago. But my daughter loves all of that stuff. So I was like, you watch this one. So it's on her list. So I might finally give in and watch a horror movie-ish with her.
Yeah.
Because she has to watch them with my wife because she's still up for it, but I'm not.
Do you think this sort of links in with time crimes then?
That's what I was thinking when you talked about
the causal loop, that's straight.
It does. It's just like time crimes. It's about someone trying to escape this loop and just kind of compounding bad decisions and you know, bodies beginning to pile up because of it.
Yeah. Okay, so Time Crimes is 2007 and it's a Spanish film and the director is Nacho Vigalondo. Yeah, this apparently is inspired by 2000 AD, like Alan Moore stuff in 2000 AD comic. And there was going to be an English language remake as well.
I heard Cronenberg was attached. I don't think it ever happened, but I think it was supposed to happen at least at one point in time.
One of the observations I had on that one, and I think it's the same with, like you said, any of these things where, and I think this occurred to me because it was a kind of a middle-aged, not very glamorous bloke is the sort of the star of the movie or the main character, right? Which I think was quite interesting as well. You know, there's no sort of like attractive people in, well, there are. But the main guy, you know, he's kind of like a bit knackered. He goes to, well, the first thing he does when he comes home from shopping is goes for a sleep, you know, in the afternoon because he's a bit tired. And it made me think of something like a David Goodis novel, like when a real kind of like a real sort of film noir type of thing, like Shoot the Piano Player or something, where you've just got this sequence of events where this poor bloke, you know, it's either mistaken identity or someone kind of does something and they just get relentlessly pounded for the rest of the film. Do you know what I mean? Everything goes wrong. Or like a Hitchcock, you know, where something just goes wrong and there's a mistaken identity and it just keeps, and this is like a kind of time travel version of that, right? Where just everything just keeps getting fucked up and this poor guy, there's that bit where, I mean, how much more could he get? There's a bit, I don't know, where he's already beaten up. He's already in bandages. He's broken every bone in his face. And then he kind of falls over again. And you're like, oh, my God. It's almost like a sort of Harold Lloyd film for a second. You know, that was interesting. But that's what, for me, tied it back to sort of like a film noir or something like that. You know, one of those. But, you know, because it's very kind of understated, isn't it, as well? Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing, you know, it's all kind of the reactions of all the people is they're all quite downplayed. Like when he first meets the girl, and she like comes and knocks on the door of the car and says, are you okay? And the guy's there dressed like the mummy or something. I would just be like, run away. You know, what are you doing? Just don't help him out of the car. He's got, you know, all that kind of stuff. That was understated, but at the same time, like not normal, if you see what I mean. So it's like very dislocated. I think, you know, you're sort of sitting there kind of, the people are reacting to things quite normally that aren't normal at all, the situations. So as a viewer, I think it kind of puts you, I don't know, like I said, dislocated in terms of what you're watching.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny you mentioned Hitchcock, because this movie always reminded me of Rear Window, you know, as he's sitting out on his lawn, just in his chair, looking out, except it turns into kind of a goofy slapstick almost version of Rear Window with time travel.
Yeah, because there are some slapstick bits. But again, it's like, I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I couldn't tell you anything about any incidental music or anything. Is there any? Because it's not like, you know what I mean? They're not playing. They're not really kind of amping it up, are they? It's all quite understated.
I don't remember the score at all, no.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's all just like, oh, shit happens. No, this guy, you know. And it's just like loads of pratfalls and him just like, you know, he just gets, at one point I was laughing because he's just getting so beaten up, you know. And he's got this world weary sort of, oh, you know, it's just, it was funny. But I did like it a lot, actually.
And it kind of reminded me of like, you know, the other Spanish director, Pedro Almodóvar, you know, that kind of like sense, that black sense of humor that just kind of ingrains everything. I thought, you know, if he were to make a low budget sci-fi film, it would probably come out something like Time Crimes.
The director also is, he does... Well, it's mainly like he's contributed like kind of shorts, sort of like 20 minutes, half an hour things to other films or, well, the main is it's the VHS series. It's VHS Viral. There's a segment on there called Parallel Demons. That's 2014 and that's way more of a like, it's a bit darker and kind of, it's like, it's satanic really. It's kind of, I don't know, it gets fucked up. I don't know, Jay, do you want to?
I watched it blind and I did not like VHS Viral. I thought it was kind of a struggle to get to that point.
Yeah.
But when it got to that point and that section burst out, I didn't know it was the same guy who made Time Crimes. But immediately I liked it. It was, it seemed a lot fresher. And, you know, it was this guy who's invented this this machine, which is a portal to, like, another dimension or something. And he opens it up and he looks through and it's like, you know, ostensibly it's the same guy as himself. And you think he's just kind of opened up to, like, an identical dimension. And the guys decide to go into each other's dimension for 15 minutes. But then he finds out that they're not the same dimension at all. And it kind of takes a goofy turn. And knowing that it's the same guy that made Time Crimes, it kind of makes sense because given the much shorter amount of time, like 15 minutes or something, to make a short film rather than a full movie, he just decides to go full stupid straight away. And he has these, the people in the other dimension are like satanic demons with giant penis monsters. It's ridiculous. And
did you see notice the big... it's like the big like Zeppelin balloon that crosses the sky and it's got like a inverted crucifix on it.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I laughed out loud when I saw that.
Yeah, I was just into it from there when I saw it. Well, before that, but when I saw that, I was like, yeah, 100%. This is like...
It went from like high-minded sci-fi to what the fuck in like, you know, seconds. And it was whiplash. But I mean, I can't recommend it because it's the stupidest thing ever. But it's worth watching for sure. Especially
it's on YouTube.
Yeah, is it okay?
It's on YouTube. Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's gory at all. It's just incredibly stupid. If you want to watch it, it's worth watching. It's kind of like if you've ever seen the RoboCop penis video on YouTube. It's worth watching for the same kind of giggles. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I don't know. Did you watch the Out of Time one from last year that I suggested? The 2021 film, did anyone know?
I did.
You did?
So which one is that? Because I've watched so many in the last month. Yeah.
Okay, I'll outline this one. There's three aliens able to host like different human bodies.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah. The Mojave Desert one.
Yeah, and they're on a mission to kill humans and wait for the sort of...
Yeah.
The arrival.
Absolutely. Yeah. Great one.
Yeah. And it's a special agent and a LAPD detective on the sort of the tail of these aliens. I don't know. I thought this one was great. I wasn't sure when I saw it and then initially started watching it because it's sort of like a B movie, but in a way it kind of reminded us of, well, Time Cop is the obvious one. You know, cops travel back in time or into the future to stop some stuff happening. to save Earth, that kind of vibe. But then I was watching it and there was parts, I was like, oh, it's kind of like Repo Man in a way. Mm-hmm. Well, those elements that made us think of that film, because I love Repo Man. It's one of my favorites. And also, it's the last Charles Bukowski book, Pulp, which is the real pulpy detective thing that gets really like crazy in the last sort of page, where it's just like aliens come down and it reminded us of that.
I'd forgotten about that. That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd completely forgotten about that. You know, I thought this was really, this one fascinated me, right? Because there's a couple of things in it. So first of all, I'm a sucker for anything sort of like 50s, you know, kind of secret government agency in a bunker in the desert. Not that I believe any of that shit, but I just love that as a subject matter, you know, as a jumping off point. It's got the Terminator thing going on as well, right? You know, where, like you said, they're going back in time to stop something happening in the future. It's that sort of setup, right? But with a secret shadowy government agency and all that stuff. But there were some great bits about this that I really liked, where there's a bit where the policeman comes back comes to the future from the past and is obviously wearing different clothes, and he sees some sort of like boating outfit, some sort of J. Crew sort of outfit on, like, you know, he's in one of the swanky stores in Beverly Hills or something. Yeah. And so the next scene, he's just suddenly wearing this kind of getup, like kind of a knotted pullover over a kind of like a shirt. He looks like someone out of Miami Vice, right? And he's like that for the next sort of 5 minutes. And then suddenly in the next scene, he's just back into his suit again. That was just crazy.
He's a good actor as well, that guy.
He was like, great. I really liked him. Yeah. But and then if his name was something, because he's like a classic American guy, right? And he's called like Brad or something, which I thought was really funny. But I thought that was really weird that the filmmakers are just trying to, you know, they've got this film, which is looking pretty good. It's obviously on a budget, right? You can tell, right? But the acting's generally pretty good. The plot's great, you know, and the stuff that's not really big budget is kind of charmingly done. But you've got a couple of these random things where, like I said, he just wears different clothes for a few minutes. And there's this other bit where later on she's in the desert or something, or she's looking around and you just think they obviously the light was good or something. I just felt, oh, maybe the light was good and they shot some scenes of her wandering around the desert. But it was just so weird and kind of self-indulgent and strange. You got this kind of couple of minutes of her kind of looking wistfully into the sunset. You know, for me, that was a bit of a sort of strange thing that sort of distracted me almost from the actual bits about the film that were really good, you know?
Yeah.
But I still really enjoyed it, despite those kind of, I think, I don't know, it's difficult for me to say, but clumsiness or something like that, you know what I mean, about presenting it.
As a modern day sort of B-movie film, that's, you know, it's not getting like the big push, but, you know, I thought it was done really well and the editing's really good and like the kind of, it's just pretty good way to like fill in the hour and a half. I think it's only a 90 minute as well. It's quite a, you know, it doesn't fuck around. It's like pretty concise. And
there's a lot to be said for that.
Yep.
You know, definitely. I think a lot of these are though, right? Time Crimes as well was only an hour and a half, I think.
90 minutes is the length. Well, it always was the length, wasn't it? When you were hiring VHS and stuff, it was always like, all right, standard.
I think it's like 70 minutes a movie has to be over here. If it's not 70 minutes, it's not classed as a movie.
Right. Oh, right. Okay.
Something like that. And I thought, Ed, I noticed the same thing, you know, the scenes at the end of the film where our hero, she's just walking around the desert looking pretty in the sun. I thought, they're just padding the time here, aren't they? This is totally unnecessary. I bet they were like at, 69 minutes and they were like, we need some more footage.
So. I just love, I love like what might have been the rationale for including that there, because clearly it doesn't, you know, it stood out to both of us, right?
Yeah.
And, but yeah, so I'd love to be behind the, you know, find out what the decision was that put that in, because and then there's some other bits and pieces that they signpost, you know, some stuff like, you know, she's feeling pissed off and there's a bit where she's maybe, I don't know, you know, she parks a car up at the side of the road and kind of has a cigarette or something like that, you know, and looks down at the city and, you know, all that kind of stuff. I thought those bits were quite funny, quite charming, you know. But there's the occasional bit that made it kind of like, it's almost like, you know, a lot of it they could have got away with it not being necessarily so kind of B-movie, do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But then those bits, this is like, okay, it's almost like we're saying, all right, audience, we are a B-movie. And I don't know why they did them, you know.
I enjoyed it though. I thought it was pretty fun. Yeah, the thing that it reminded me of was back, you know, if you're, you know, I'm kind of showing my age here, but back in the 80s, you know, all the TV shows like Knight Rider or an Airwolf, they would have like a movie-length pilot. And it felt like a movie-length pilot for a TV series. Like these two, you know, the FBI agent from the 50s and the modern cop, they were going to team up and like, you know, solve time crimes on a, you know, in weekly episodes.
Totally take your point on that, because of the way it ends up, you could see them going off to more adventures. Definitely.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I, the other thing that I liked about Out of Time was that bit where it kind of starts. There's a bit where at the beginning about the old man kind of leaving home and they pick him up at the bus stop and take him home and stuff. And I'd completely forgotten about him until he becomes important sort of 10 minutes from the end. Yeah. And I thought that was quite well done. They didn't sort of hit you over the head with that one. They just let it kind of, we'll just leave that one there and we'll come back to it later. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that shows that, you know, there's a level of filmmaking there that's, you know, it's pretty sophisticated. Mm. Yeah, because, you know, a lot of crappy B-movies, they wouldn't think to, you know, doing that. You know, it was, what's it, Chekhov's knife, where they, you know, if you see it in the start, it's got to come to pay off at the ending.
Yeah.
Like that kind of thing. I might be rambling about bollocks.
But I know what you mean. Yeah, no, I thought that was good. I thought they did it well. So yeah, that's a two thumbs up from me, that one.
Cool.
Yeah, it was a fun film.
We can look at the kind of the harder some films now, if you wish. The other ones on the list was Coherence and Primer, which I think they're both probably ones you could hold up as pretty impossible films.
Yeah, I mean, I like Coherence a lot, but is it really a time travel film? It's not really, is it? It's just kind of like...
I think it's the idea of like the multiverse type idea.
I agree with that, yeah.
Metaphysics.
It could be a time travel film in that they could be all slightly displaced time-wise or kind of lined up. But yeah, I think Che's right. It's not this in the same way as the rest of these films. But it is, I guess, what it has in common with the kind of causal loop films is that it's a multiverse version of the causal loop, right? I suppose that, you know, one iteration of these people does something to another and then that causes them to do something to someone else. And it kind of gets all twisted up that way. I think that's probably the relationship that's got with the rest of the films.
This is 2013, and apparently the director worked on this plot idea for about a year or so with just like improvised acting. So no one really knows. It's not in that way, it's more of a naturalistic sort of, it's just a strange one, an outlier definitely, but it ties into the more scientific look at the effects of things like the multiverse, and I don't know, it's complicated.
Yeah, and it's not one, you know, I haven't really thought about it too much, and because I think everything in the movie with the events that are happening are so kind of random and disorganized that you probably shouldn't try to think about it too much. It's just a series of odd events.
Yeah.
But I think it's a well-made film. I think the acting is good. It's a good kind of ensemble.
Okay. I mean, the thing I liked about Coherence was I think – so I've got a friend, right, who's basically the son of an old drummer of mine that I played in a band with years ago, and he unfortunately died from very young. And his son was 9 at the time when his dad died. And he's since gone on to become a film director. So he's an actor, writer, but he's done a couple of movies now. He's just done his second feature. And I think when I was watching Coherence, it was just about a week after his second movie came out. And I'd watched it, my wife and I watched it. And, you know, because it's him making it, and I'm not super involved with him or anything, but I sort of touch base with him every so often. And, you know, funding and all that kind of stuff is really on my mind when I'm watching his movie going, oh, that looks amazing for the money they probably didn't have to do it and everything. And I think Coherence was when I was watching it, I was thinking about, wow, they made an amazing movie, right? Like there's almost nothing about that movie that you'd say, oh, they could have done that with a bit more budget or that. They seem to have made a sci-fi movie with literally no special effects, right? With just a car. Yeah. Almost no. Yeah, there's like maybe two different scene, you know, locations or something, right? It's all very small, but it doesn't ever feel like it. You know, I think it's just a real sort of really accomplished job of making a great sci-fi movie with no money. Well, with the same money that you might, you know, it, spent to make a movie of a dinner party, right? Because that's what happens. But I just think it's really well done. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it is. I remember, when I was at school in undergrad, I remember making a movie about a dinner party. Would never have crossed my mind to make a movie like Coherence. You know, now I feel like an idiot. Like, oh, geez, I should have thought bigger.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I did send my mate, I sent him and said, dude, you should watch this. It's fucking great. And of course, I'm sure he's watched it already. But he's like, oh, yeah, thanks. It's really good sort of thing. But yeah, but you should check him out. He did a movie a couple of years ago called Knuckle Dust. It's just one word. It's on Amazon and all that stuff. But it's a sort of, it's like a, I don't know, some... I think it might be right up your street. It's quite fighty and punchy and blood and scariness and all that kind of stuff. I had to watch it through my hands, you know. But it's pretty good. It's very, very over the top. It's the exact opposite of Time Crimes, you know, and that understatedness. This is like full on, everything's in the red up to 11, screaming, gory kind of fightingness. But right. Yeah, Knuckle Dust. It's worth watching.
I will check it out.
Yeah, give it a go.
Yeah, man. Primer. Is the guess the main one that people think of in this aspect of a film, which is quite an early one because it's 2004, and the guy who directed it also acts in it, and that's Shane Carruth. And I was looking, the budget for Sony Light was only $7,000, but it made like $800,000. It made a quite a significant amount of money from this low-budget film that probably took a while to like trickle down into people seeing and people talking about. But it's just like it's fucked, really. I mean, there's no way to explain it sensibly, I don't think, because it's very much relying on all these paradox theories and then some, really. I don't know. I've seen it a couple of times, and every time I watch it, it just fucks us up. It's just odd. Yeah.
It has a pretty simple theme, though, really. I mean,
it does, but so does Predestination has a simple theme. A lot of these films have simple themes. A house, you know, it's a simple theme, isn't it? But
it's really just about these two scientists who are kind of banging heads. You know, they've come up with this new invention, and they have very different ideas about how they want it to be implemented for their own, you know. You know, their ideas about the future of this machine are very different, and it just kind of diverges along two different timelines. It's a really low budget film. They do an awful lot with $7,000, which, you know, not a lot of money at all. It probably just covered the film stock.
Yeah,
the time machine is like a, what is it, like a box wrapped in tin foil or something. It's
in a lockup. Yeah,
it's pretty basic. I love it.
Yeah, no, it's I'd not heard it at all. And every time I've, you know, over the last month since we sort of got this list together of movies to watch, it just crops up. It's one of those things like, you know, the first time you hear an interesting word and then you just hear it every day for the next month. It's been like that, you know. So it's very much, I think, got a reputation amongst this type of, you know, theme of film, right? Time travel film. It's in everyone's top list of, you know, if you go far enough down, you'll see Primer. Yeah. And it's right up against some of the really big, you know, time travel movies, right? So it's and I think it's quirky enough and weird enough and just complicated enough, really. But it seems to be complicated in an approachable way, so people are quite happy to put themselves through it, right? Knowing that, do you know what I mean? It's not an intimidating kind of like a kind of cerebral thing. It's just like you sit there and watch it and go, whoa.
Yeah,
you can still kind of diagram it. You know, you can watch the film and figure out what they're doing and where they're going and how it's going to affect the other characters, because there's only like, you know, three or four characters in the film.
Mm.
So it's not like Coherence where it's just kind of like just random and just chaos. It's like you really don't know what's going on. You can see the results of what's going on, but you don't really know if there's a rhyme or reason to it. But in Primer, there is. It's just, you know, it's basically just two guys and different versions of these guys just going head to head.
I think I would have liked better actors, if I'm going to be super picky, from a kind of perspective of someone that's kind of seen the movie but not watched it loads of times and kind of fallen in love with it. Do you know what I mean? It's a bit like, you know, when you hear a great record and go, God, I wish they'd spent a bit more money on the drum sound or something. But yeah, actually, eventually you go, oh, but that's actually part of why I like it. So I haven't got to that bit yet. And I'm going, you know, I wish it could have been just a little bit more, I guess, you know, just slick, really, because that would have, but, you know, that's just
it's,
at the
it's
moment.
Put, it's punk rock, really, though, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. Exactly.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I will love it, like, in the future when I've watched it a few more times. And I'll be like, I can't believe I wanted, like, you know, Kevin Bacon to be in one of the roles or whoever, you know.
If either of you seen the other film that director's done called Upstream Colour?
I still haven't watched it.
It's from early 2010s, I think. I can't remember the date of it. That's a whole other, like, weird vibe, that one, because it's sort of, it's got these really kind of like abstract scenes and like
just
kind of
a worm theme or something.
Yeah, it's pigs as well.
Yeah,
it's like a parasite or something. I think it's got like a sort of David Lynch kind of awkwardness to the dialogue and things in it, and the scenes and things, and there's like a something like Beyond the Black Rainbow as well, where it's just fucked.
It certainly looks, just looking at the trailer here as it scrolls through, it certainly looks like, you know, it's got bigger production values, and obviously it was not just a $7,000 movie. It's got a 6.7 on IMDb, so I think it's kind of certainly got an audience, you know.
This description here, Ed, is kind of goes, it's like a lot of them, it goes somewhere to describe and yeah, but when you watch it, it's all of the different experience, because you watch it and you just feel a bit weirded out by the end of it. You're just like, this is just fucking wacky, you know, really. But not in like in a spoof sort of way or anything. Not like it's in a very serious, what if this was to happen, and then let's go into this world and see what the experience is. It's just it's not one that leaves you with a particularly like pleasant vibe at the end of it. It's just like, oh, this is a bit, you know.
I love those kind of movies. So.
Oh, well, you like it then, yeah.
I love fucking wacky movies.
So Shane Carruth, that seems to be his name.
Yeah, that's
and he's a former software engineer, which is kind of like, there's definitely that kind of vibe to Primer.
Yeah.
You can see where he might have drawn on some of the work experiences for some of the look and feel and language of Primer, I think.
Yeah. The only other films, I mean, I had put down were more, I guess, sci-fi orientated, which is like Slaughterhouse-5 is the kind of, the classic, or I suppose that's quite an early on, like a 70s take on that idea of like a fractured sort of timelines and things, and the way that you would present that in a movie. Because it's not just like you say, like a generic, you know, aliens type thing going on, but like a psychological approach to that idea, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Vonnegut, a bit like Che, I'm a big fan of Vonnegut. I think I've read all his books. A very long time ago, and there's this kind of playful, because, you know, a lot of the themes and the characters and the same things happen across the books, right? There's different sort of people, and they seem to have this kind of, he writes this kind of really kind of playful kind of way of writing, and I think that in the movie a lot of that kind of came across, that kind of whimsicalness. But it's one of those things where, you know, I keep telling my daughter, she's doing film A-level, right? And, you know, based on my massive experience of having read like maybe two books about movies, I'm obviously giving her advice. But it strikes me the 70s is almost like the last decade where really crazy people were given millions of dollars to make movies, right? Before like the accountants kind of moved in and sort of reined things in a little bit. But I really enjoyed it. Because like I said to you, Pete, I hadn't seen the film for years and years and years. And I sat down and sort of watched it and thought, oh, I'll probably do this in three sittings in between, you know, some activities. And I just bashed through it in one go. It's really good. I mean, you know, some of it's very sort of dated in the way it's kind of handled the look and feel of some stuff. But actually, the fact that it's set, you know, a lot of it's set in sort of 1945, you know, Europe. I think actually the grittiness of that 70s kind of, you know, production values just worked really well. You know, I think you really felt that you were there. It was more the kind of like the stuff where it got extraterrestrial that you're sort of, you know, the special effects just really aren't up to it. And that's where it looks a little bit like Blake 7 or something like that, you know. But I really, really enjoyed it, actually, despite all of its hamminess. But yeah, I thought it was a really, really worthy addition to the list, I have to say.
Okay, cool. Chair, have you seen that one?
I have not seen it, but okay. Now on Ed's recommendation, I feel I need to go back. I read the book a long time ago. I probably need to revisit the book and watch the movie as well.
What other like adaptations of his work has appeared in film or whatever?
I'm not sure what they've done, actually, yeah, because a lot of his books are just, that you know, I don't know, sort of quite hard to film. And again, it's tricky because I read all of these probably when I was like, you know, at university or something, instead of doing actually all the books I was supposed to be reading. So it's been a long, long time since I read them all. But yeah, I mean, I'd love to know. There's a great series on Netflix called The Movies That Made Us. I don't know if you've seen that, but it's like it's a documentary series about movies, right, that the making of, but they're all big budget movies. So it's like, you know, Friday the 13th or Back to the Future or you know, all those big movies like that, and there's a making of. And I'd love to see a making of Slaughterhouse 5, just because it is that kind of weird mixture of, like, clearly they spent some money on it, they've got a big cast, the sets are great, they've got different locations, but you know, it has a kind of, like I said, a sort of playful feel to it that makes it feel like it's maybe a little bit lightweight, or someone didn't take it seriously, or I don't know. It's a strange one. I'd like to see more about the making of it, really.
Or any of those early or mid-70s.
Yeah, I don't think there's not a boring making of to be made from any of those films, I think, because there's so much craziness going on.
Soylent Green or something like that would be, would it happen these days? That kind of, I don't know, maybe it would, yeah, but different way.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? Different way.
Yeah.
But there certainly were some great movies made at that time that were sort of backed by, you know, decent studios.
Big actors in this sort of lead role, like Charlton Heston or someone.
Like Dune, for example. I mean, I guess they were trying to get Dune made all through the 70s.
Yeah.
And it kind of ended up on David Lynch's plate somehow. That still seems so weird to me.
It's very strange, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's very strange, yeah.
Oh, what's the movie? Logan's Run, which was like a huge budget film. And I was like, how did this film ever get made? It just seems like such a goofy idea for like a film that back in the 70s cost millions of dollars and nearly bankrupted the studio. It's just, yeah, I guess they had more cocaine back then, you know.
That's what I'm wondering. I mean, Zardoz is another one that springs to mind as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's just like complete bonkers that, you know, that was Sean Connery, right? And but Logan's Run, I loved Logan's Run. It was great. It's the one with the jewel in the palm of the hand, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. Yeah, I loved those films. They were great.
Yeah, for sure. And like, what's another one? Silent Running as well.
Oh, yeah.
I watched that because my kids, a few years ago, they were really into WALL-E, and I was like, kids, you're going to watch Silent Running. It's basically WALL-E. And I forgot how miserable it was. It's a really, you know, he kills his shipmates and just like heads off into the universe by himself. It's like, whoa, that's pretty dark, actually.
Yeah, that's Silent Running's one of Mark Kermode's favorite movies. You know, the BBC film critic, he absolutely loves Silent Running.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember him talking about that when WALL-E was out and he was reviewing it, because my kids were watching WALL-E as well. And yeah. But I didn't get them to watch it.
No, I still love that film, but I also love WALL-E, but vastly different reasons.
How about going through some of the big budget movies that we didn't? Because I thought,
that was
it. Said, hey, we're going to talk about time travel films. I'm like, yeah, cool, Back to the Future. What was the other ones I was thinking of? Bill and Ted. That was the other one I thought of.
That was
good, actually. I quite enjoyed those. I haven't seen them again, or, you know, because there was two, right? Apart from the new one.
There were two, back in the day. I haven't seen the new one yet.
No, nor have I. It got really badly panned, so I might like it. I don't know. But they were good movies. And what's the other film? Oh, yeah, the other stuff I thought about was cryo films, you know, like time travel through the kind of cryogenic side of things.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like Demolition Man, for example.
And the thing that struck me was Futurama, but the Futurama is obviously not a movie, but that's the thing I thought of straight away was Futurama.
Yeah, for sure, yeah. I'm trying to think of other examples of that. They're all terrible films like Demolition Man or Encino Man.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was. Yeah, that's the kind of accidental freezing in ice, wasn't it? The Encino Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What was the other one I was thinking of? There was a really funny movie I watched years ago. It's a French movie. I think it's got. It's probably Jean Reno and probably Gérard Depardieu, but they play knights that come forward in time.
I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, and it's a kind of low budget, like not to be taken seriously. I remember watching it and literally crying myself, like I thought I was going to die because I thought it was probably maybe had a glass of wine too many or something. But I remember absolutely loving that. I got it on DVD and watched it. I thought it was hilarious. That was just a classic, you know, like a Bill and Ted kind of thing. Idiots out of time get pushed forward and, you know, meet the modern day. But that was funny. That was really funny. Of course, I can't remember what it's called. I have to dig it up.
What other things did you think you were going to get, well, you'd be hit with as opposed to what, this obscure list of
things? Since my son, so my son is now 14, and what happens is he kind of gets into a movie franchise and then we have to watch all of them. So like last year we watched all of the Terminator movies. So, you know, all six of them, I think I've seen all of them.
Oh, Christ, fucking hell.
Yeah, all the way through.
I did the same with my son, but we stopped at three.
No, we pushed on through. And there's some little, there's some unexpected gems moments. I mean, let's say not actual whole films, but yeah, it was all right though. That was good. So I thought that might be on the list. There was another film called Frequency, which is not really a time travel film, I don't think, but it's the one where I think that might be Scott Bakula as well. Is it him? Where he hears his dad. He's like a radio ham, and he hears his dad broadcasting to him from the past.
Oh, that rings a bell. Oh,
Dennis Quaid.
Thank you. There we are.
Yeah,
that's it. Yeah, but I enjoyed that movie, I seem to think, as well. I like the idea of that. And it's got more of that, Christopher Nolan movie, Interstellar. It's got that kind of same feel to it where, you know, you've got kind of like, you know, something coming from another time, not just someone going, hey, how you doing? It's me. This is, you know, it's like someone's trying to contact you from another time or something to communicate some truth to you or something. Right. I thought that was quite good.
Another one that seems to be pretty popular right now is the Groundhog Day type movie where someone gets kind of stuck in a time loop.
Mm.
That Andy Samberg movie that came out.
Yes, Palm Springs.
That one, yeah.
And actually when they did that Star Trek reboot a few years ago, when J.J. Abrams did the Star Trek reboot, that was a bit of a time travel thing going on in that. And they ended up shifting to another galaxy, another dimension. Oh, no, sorry. Kind of a parallel, you know, universe thing. But there was a bit of time travel in that as well, which is interesting.
I never saw that. I never saw any of the reboots.
Yeah, right, because what they did in that first one is they basically contrived to get them into another universe so that they could then be completely free of all of the history of Star Trek. Which is very clever, right? And so it gave them that, where they shunted sideways into another sort of time or another universe, or whatever. I can't remember exactly the details, but yeah, it gave them, freed them up to do what they wanted, really.
Oh, clever. Yeah. Mm. Well, that's a get out of jail free card, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
That's pretty much everything covered. So I do want to do like some kind of takeaway from the experience of what you think of this genre, and is it one that you'll be revisiting, sort of thing?
I think that is the main attraction about it, is that you can revisit them. And unless they're really terrible films or really clumsily done, there's something that you're going to watch. You're going to pick up something new every time, right? That's partly it for me. You know, I love, I read a lot of, I think as the political situation in the world gets worse, I read more and more sci-fi. I didn't start off reading sci-fi, but I've ended up reading it almost exclusively. And, you know, I'm a sucker for a bit of, you know, that type of thing, you know, in my downtime, as it were. And so I love watching this type of thing, and I think it's the gift that keeps on giving, really.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm the same way, you know. Yeah, as the world situation gets more depressing, I kind of turn to just watching just a ton of like awful horror films, and I think I've exhausted all the awful horror films, so I'm turning to sci-fi now, and films I might have missed. So yeah, absolutely. You know, the time travel films have kept me entertained since I was a little kid. So I don't think that's going to change anytime soon.
And I think also the fact that you guys could give me a list of movies that I've only seen two of them before. I'd seen Coherence and Slaughterhouse 5. The rest of them were completely new to me. You know, so it shows it's a really rich kind of vein to sort of mine in that. And I really appreciate you passing them on to me. So it was nice having to watch some movies for a change, you know, because there's too much stuff to watch, right? So it's nice to have someone go, no, these are the six movies you're going to watch this month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'd spent, I think it was like watching all the horror films in October to do stuff, and then watching all this kind of thing like November, just ramming all this kind of this subgenre thing in, and it kind of maybe there's only sort of certain bursts you can take. You couldn't like exclusively watch or rewatch, but to come back to you know, a year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever, come back to watch them again. It's like, it's good.
There's a certain fun to be had from kind of focusing on them for a month, right? And then I think obviously what I would probably then do is just, you know, pepper them throughout, liberally sprinkle them throughout my kind of viewing in the future. But it was quite good actually kind of like doing a kind of sweatbox version of them, you know, like it's just all time travel all the time, as it were.
You know? Kind of see which one you're most drawn to when you do that, I think. It's like horror films or anything. You just kind of like, you find out which is the one, and the one that you hold as like your sort of benchmark for stuff that you want to be like that. Che, are you like, this is the question, isn't it? Faith or void?
Oh, I'm void.
Yeah, that's
sorry.
The.
I thought you might be.
Well, yeah, I'd agree definitely on that record. But like, Subject to Change is just amazing, though. It's just like an incredible.
Yeah, I'm not like one or the other. I'm definitely both, but it pushed me to shove and void.
Yeah.
I think on that one. Also, it's just the void thing is just absolutely insane, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it's like, it's not, it's almost like, could they play that again the same? And I'm not sure they could, right? It's just still complete chaos.
Yeah. I've always liked that, you know, hardcore band falling down a flight of stairs sound. And
yeah, well, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
yeah. Falling down. I mean, it is just because I keep every so often I play it like once a year or something just to remind myself how fucking insane it is.
Yeah.
My friend Bert produced that. If you look at that, it says produced by Bert Kiros, right? And I was talking to him about that and he's just like, yeah, right, produced. You know, he hung out and went, just kind of went, okay, and just went like, fuck, you know.
He pressed record and that was about it.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.